So this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. And my understanding is we've kept poor Tony Leo on the line. Are you there, Tony?
Hi, Phil. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Good to be talking to you. The book you got, and I know it's doing very well. Some political candidates have been holding it up and showing it to people. The Truth About the 37 Oshawa GM Strike by Tony Leo, Baraka Books. And Tony, let's look at the big picture. You're with Unifor, and you're a GM Oshawa man yourself, retired. We've had a zigzag on what the policy of the Canadian government is with electrical vehicles. Where is the dial at the moment? Is there a serious commitment in your view? And what is that? What's the implication? Hello?
I think we're still waiting for details on what the new government policy is. Things started to shift a month ago when they announced that they had struck a deal with China that would allow the import of some Chinese-built electric vehicles into Canada, 49,000 initially. And they said that it was going to be part of a broader automotive policy, and more details of that were announced this past week. But it's still not completely clear. It seems to be based on trying to offer incentives for manufacturing in Canada, but those incentives are primarily in terms of lower taxes and increased government grants, which has, you know, been the policy for quite a while, but that really hasn't worked. So they're continuing that along with some not specified measures that will give credits to companies that assemble vehicles in Canada, and other companies that want to import vehicles will have to buy those credits. So it'll be creating some kind of a credit trading scheme that would benefit the companies that assemble vehicles in Canada.
I notice our political leaders are bouncing around on this. Ford was, he was about 2 weeks ago, he was worried about the Chinese vehicles maybe would spy on us, and that there had to be, we couldn't have any deals. But he's changed his tone. And Unifor has been speaking out on the issue because they were worried about the big three and their status. Are they changing their position? What is the position of the Unifor at the moment? And by the way, I also understand, I mentioned at the top of the show, the Canadian Labor Congress and Unifor are now starting to talk about another matter that they're being sidelined. Could you talk about those things?
Sure. I think that Unifor's policy, as you rightly point out, has always been conditioned on wanting what's best for the companies that their members work for, which are the Detroit-based auto manufacturers, GM, Ford, and Stellantis. And I think that always creates problems for the outlook that they put forward. So going back to when the first announcement was made that there was a deal with China, there was a press conference that Lana Payne, president of Unifor, was at, along with Doug Ford, Flavio Volpe from the Parts Manufacturers Association, the companies that make auto parts, and the head of the Canadian Vehicle Manufacturers Association, which represents only the Detroit-based auto manufacturers. And they were all singing from the same song sheet about how bad it was to allow any Chinese vehicles to be imported into Canada, and they all wanted to maintain the 100% tariff, which of course had been implemented unilaterally by Canada at the request of the United States. And at that press conference, Lana Payne referred to the other people there as her partners. And I think that's really the source of the problem that Unifor has in trying to defend the interests of their members and workers more broadly in Canada, is that they have to view everything from the point of view of what's best for their partners in the industry. And I think that there's a quote from Adam Radwanski, a columnist in the Globe and Mail from last October, which I think nails it exactly. He said, "Canada is stuck in an increasingly abusive relationship with the three traditional North American automakers." And I think that's right. What we've seen over the last number of years is that our governments continually give billions of dollars to GM, Ford, and Stellantis. And GM, Ford, and Stellantis take that money and continually reduce the number of jobs they have in Canada and go back to the government and ask for more money. And because of Unifor's outlook, they support those requests. And so it is an increasingly abusive relationship. And if we want a better solution, we have to break completely with that idea that the way to improve things is to keep giving money to GM, Ford, and Stellantis.
Well, wouldn't it, you know, something comes to mind. I mean, that story that the President of the Canadian Labour Congress and President of Unifor were both quoted as saying, you know, labour's got to be in this and we're being sidelined. And you just pointed out that calling the big three people partners, that puts them, as you say, in an abusive relationship with the big three. But how about the people who are identified as labour? CLC, Unifor, Unifor is not in the CLC, right?
Unifor has not been a member of the CLC for quite a number of years now. I think it's getting close to 10 years ever since.
I never heard anybody discuss, why don't we solve that problem?
Yes, well, it has been not much addressed. I hear rumors that it's being talked about behind closed doors, but and hopefully we'll see something at some point. But there certainly hasn't been anything public about it. And so we had this press conference in Ottawa called by the CLC, the head of the CLC, Bea Brusk, and along with leaders of QP and Steelworkers, Public Service Alliance, and the Machinists. And the first speaker who's called to the mic is Lana Payne from Unifor. You know, so that's already odd. The issue of Unifor not being a member of the CLC wasn't mentioned. But in her remarks, Lana echoed the introductory remarks from Bea Brusk that labor needed to be at the decision-making table. And she said, "It's to everyone's benefit to ensure workers are at the table, that unions are at the table." And then she said, "And that industry is there."
That the industry?
Industry, yes. "We all have to be there to make sure we get a true Team Canada approach to how we get through this trade war."
So you have team members that don't actually talk to each other and do, in fact, raid each other.
Indeed, yes.
Unifor is committed to raiding. They said they were.
That's why they left the CLC. Absolutely. That was explicit.
So this is all play acting at some level.
And they still want to see the industry players, the companies, as part of their team. And, you know, I want to be very clear here. General Motors, Stellantis, and Ford have a very different view of what's good than all the rest of us. They actually don't particularly want to build vehicles in Canada unless they can export them to the United States. They don't build vehicles in Canada to sell in Canada. 90% of what they build in Canada is to export to the United States. And if that's not possible, then they start closing plants. That's exactly what we're seeing. And if you look at their remarks to government and in public about the current situation, all they care about is a deal with the United States that allows them to go back to the way things that were before. Mm-hmm. They don't want to build an industry in Canada that makes vehicles for Canadians. They have zero interest in that. That's why they're against China being allowed to import vehicles, is because they want to import vehicles to Canada from the United States and Mexico and sell them here. Mm-hmm. Not because they want to build vehicles here. And so if our union representatives have this compromised position with GM, Ford, and Stellantis, I don't believe that it leads to advocating for what would be best for our members, auto workers in Canada, and for Canadian working class, which is a real industry in Canada that's based on building more affordable vehicles in Canada for Canadians. Mm-hmm. And a big portion of that in the future has to be electric, because that is the future of the industry.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, we often note this, speaking to you, there is the issue, if we were to just say auto workers, the half or more of the auto workers, people who work for a living, wages, are not in uniform, right?
Well, certainly, much more than half. There's five auto companies assembling vehicles in Canada. GM, Ford, Stellantis are unionized by Unifor, and Honda and Toyota are non-union. And CAW was never successful in unionizing those plants, and Unifor has not been either. And they currently produce about 70% of the vehicles that are assembled in Canada.
You know, it'd be interesting to get, you see, we can't even canvass their opinion, because they're just employees. We don't even know, we have no idea if they have any collective opinion. And yet we talk about auto workers, and we're all told we're only supposed to talk about the big three and the ones organized by Unifor. But we're talking about the working class itself, those making autos. We don't know what their opinion is, because they don't have any organization to speak for them. And yet Unifor can't organize them, or so far has been unsuccessful.
Well, tried a lot and been completely unsuccessful.
This is a deplorable subject.
I was having a discussion with another retiree at our last retired workers chapter meeting, and you know, he raised the issue of vehicles being imported from China. And this meeting was happened a couple of days after 1,000 or 1,200 people in Oshawa lost their jobs because of GM ending one of the shifts in Oshawa. And I said, well, you know, China didn't cause the layoff of our third shift. China didn't cause the closure of the Brampton plant for Stellantis. China was not the reason that the assembly plant in Ingersoll, owned by GM, was shut. It's not China that's hurting us. It's GM, Ford, and Stellantis that are kicking the shit out of us, and that's who we should be fighting. And he looked at me and he said, "You know, you really opened my eyes."
Yes, little simple facts can really, really leave a bruise. I got to ask you about that very specific issue. As you told me before the program, 9 months ago, the GM said, "Okay, we're gonna be closing, we're laying off a shift." And Doug Ford went through the roof, stamped his feet, poured out a bottle of whiskey. I don't know. He really maybe talked about slashing tires, but he was going to do something. And now it has happened. And is it 1,300 have lost their jobs, right? A whole shift gone?
A whole shift. So there were three shifts. Now there's two. So that's about 700 or 800 employees of GM, and another 400 or 500 who were employees of supplier plants that are also part of the production process, but contracted out to other companies.
And so where are the mass demonstrations and the pickets and the "you can't do this to us" movement?
There was, lots of talk beforehand and no action. And the day came and people were told to file for EI. And that was it. And as you and I had a discussion, I mentioned that that happened on Friday. January 30th was their last day of those 12 or 1300 workers. And on the following Wednesday was Thursday was the regularly scheduled membership meeting of Unifor Local 222, which represents all those workers. And I went with another retiree friend of mine, and there were only six other people in the room besides us.
And what is
so
that?
There was no meeting because that
they quorum. They could not get a quorum at the next local meeting that just lost 1,300 workers.
Yep.
And they could not get a quorum.
They could not. Yeah. And it's not like they normally have quorums. I think we've had a quorum at our meetings two times in the last 4 years. Some people blame the membership. I don't blame the members. The ones that come out from time to time and get told there's no quorum, go home, obviously don't feel a lot of incentive to keep going. I blame the leadership, which really does not want there to be a quorum. And quite frankly, they don't want there to be a quorum because they don't want to have to answer questions from the members. They don't want to be accountable to the members. And if there's no quorum, they don't have to do that.
So you have kind of a cutout of a local, or cutout of a union, actually. By the way, your book is really apropos, isn't it? I mean, you describe how the union was built, and one of the foundations of it was a steward system where every worker on the line could pick his head up and look down and find a representative to whom he could speak and who passed along information about the union to him. Is that right?
That's absolutely fundamental. One of the most amazing things I learned in my research was that not only were there stewards, but before the strike in 1937, so there was no union recognition, there was no collective agreement, but the union organizers had put in place over 300 stewards representing all the men and women that worked in that plant, 3,700 workers. So that's like one for every 12 or 15 workers. They had one steward wherever there was a supervisor.
Well, so, what's it like now?
Structure now in our collective agreement is one representative for every 250. and that change, which goes back to the 1950s, was one of the things that started to dismantle the sense of a union as a functioning, fighting organization of the workers in the plant.
Mm-hmm. It separates and alienates so-called representatives from members.
Yes.
Clearly. I mean, the process, you remember the British working class, there was even a film made about it, rather good, actually, a satirical film called "I'm All Right, Jack."
I remember it.
Which says, well, I'm the deputy secretary to the undersecretary of the vice president and also his cousin. And my money is bigger than your money, by the way. And you go ahead and work.
Yeah.
Not pretty. So, again, well, Tony.
Sure. And on the question of membership meetings, during the strike in 1937, they had membership meetings with 3,000 workers in attendance.
Uh-huh.
Not 8. 3,000 making the decision.
You know, the best we can do is to, frankly, with books like The Truth About the 37 Oshawa GM Strike, is to say okay, this is where we were and this is where we are. And why don't we criticize ourselves and correct this rather than say everybody will be well paid and they will be at the office and if you can reach him on the phone, you're damn lucky. You know, that had to be corrected.
Yes.
It seems to me, based on what you're telling us today about the status of the with the electrical vehicles and the way it's being played by management and their partners, the unions, this is a moment that calls for self-criticism in the union movement. Instead of, well, we're doing our best and we'll be there on Thursday and give a press conference and we'll all go on vacation in 2 weeks. Somebody has to say, listen, we need as Roosevelt said, a new deal here. Get a broom and correct the errors. Well, now
yes,
I'm preaching.
We need a different approach for sure. And we need an industry in Canada which is producing for Canadians and an industry in which workers have a say, which could be through some kind of worker ownership or at least government ownership or Crown Corporation, where the decisions are being made by Canadians in the interests of Canadians, not by an American company whose only interest is their profit.
Of the workers, by the workers, for the workers.
Yeah.
To borrow from Lincoln. Tony Leo, it's great talking to you. A lot of information. We're going to follow this closely. And what a great story about what needs to be done. Tony's the author of The Truth About the 37 Auschwitz GM Strike. You can get it from Baraka Books. Everybody ought to have a copy and read it out loud to one another. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Phil.
Okay, Taylor Report, CIOT, 89.5 FM in Toronto.